97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Well, 2 days ago, we took out Yahya Sinwar, the terrorist mastermind whose goons beheaded our men, raped our women, burnt babies alive. We took him out, and we're continuing our battle with Iran's other terrorist proxies. We're going to win this war.
That's Bibi Netanyahu talking about the defense that they have put up and the actions that they have taken to respond to the gross attacks that have been exacted on the people of Israel, the Jewish people there. And we wait and we see what happens next. There are reports out, specifically one here that I'm reading from CNN, that says the U.S. is investigating a leak of highly classified U.S. intelligence about Israel's plan for retaliation against Iran. According to three people familiar with the matter, one of the people familiar confirmed the document's authenticity. The leak is, quote, deeply concerning, a U.S. official told CNN. Well, let's get to the bottom of what is taking place here. We welcome back to the show Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, a former national security advisor to the Trump administration, as well as co-chair of the Center for American Security at the America First Policy Institute. General, thank you for being with us today. It's good to have you back.
Annie, it is always good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I want to ask you about Bibi Netanyahu's words there. He's saying we're going to win this war. I mean, it's hard to look at what has been thrust upon Israel and not think that they are at war. They've responded. How do you feel about what Israel has done so far in response to those October 7th attacks that took place just over a year ago?
Yeah, you look at somebody like Netanyahu, and he's really become what I would call Churchillian in how he's addressed the threats in his nation's face. You know, he's fighting in a small nation as they are, they're fighting in multiple directions. They're fighting against Hamas, they're fighting against Hezbollah, they're fighting against the Houthis, they're fighting against the Iranians. They're doing quite well. And they've done something that I thought was really kind of extraordinary. And they've got a philosophy, the Israelis do. They call it Dahiya. And what Dahiya means is disproportionate responses to an attack. And you can see that in the actions they've taken, primarily against the leadership of Hezbollah and Hamas. And they took out Sinwar just recently. They took out Haniyeh, who is the leader of Hamas when he was actually in Tehran. Then they took out Nasrallah, who's the leader of Hezbollah, and they took out his number two guy named Shukr. Plus, they took out probably 2,000 individuals of consequence using those pagers. And then they've gone after the Houthis, and then they've gone after the Iranians. And when you look at it, it's really quite remarkable what they've done. And they've done that without any great verbal support from the United States of America. You know, Kamala Harris hasn't given money support. I mean, she stiffed him, Netanyahu, when he came back here and spoke in front of a joint session of Congress. You know, Biden picked up the phone and called him the other day, but that was the first time in 50 days that he called Netanyahu. And you look at Trump, Trump actually has picked up the phone and called him twice recently. And so you kind of say, okay, this guy's kind of fighting on his own. It's an existential fight. He's doing quite well. It's doing well. And I think that because of that, he has put some level of deterrence into the Middle East that we haven't seen in a long, long time. You know, it's kind of interesting they haven't gone after Iran yet. And I think part of that is because they are kind of weighing their options. And they've got an enormous, you know, suite of options they can go after, either after they go to the supreme leader, they go to the nuke sites, they go to the industrial facilities, whatever it is. But when it comes in, I'll close the circle. When it comes right down to it, you've got a leader in Israel who is defending his nation, but his popularity has gone way, way up. And he's kind of basically said to everybody, you're not going to attack our people and get away with it. Mm-hmm. What's happened on 7 October over a year ago, and he's right.
We're speaking with Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg. I want to ask you about the when they got Sinwar, some people were saying like, well, this is an important moment. There, you can go one way with this, you can go another. Is there a bigger potential for peace after Sinwar, the Hamas leader, was taken out? And, of course, that's the hope for everyone. But you'd have to have both parties in that area, in that region, in those two organizations agree to have peace. Do you feel as though Israel is in a position to negotiate that peace now in a stronger way? Or do you feel like there is still more aggression that will come from Israel in order to make that case completely clear?
Yeah, I think there's there's an opportunity here. But it would take the United States to get involved. And I, by the way, Annie, I don't think they will, because I don't think they've got the legs to do it in a short period of time. But right now you've got Hamas still talking about, we're going to put an individual in charge. We're still fighting. You know, really, they're on their back foot. They're really hurting. Here's how you'd have to do that. It would take the United States of America to kind of pick up the phone and call the people who are aligned a little bit with Hamas in the region, like Qatar. And you pick up the phone and you call Al-Thani, the sheikh there, and you say, look, this is what's going on. We need your help to do it. We need the Saudis' help to do it as well. Well, the problem is they've lost all this ability to communicate. For example, Harris has got no relationship at all with Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, and neither is Biden. And they're going to be absolutely key to this whole thing because of the economic piece. They're kind of the money bags for the region. They, the Saudis, are. And there's no ability to reach out to them. So there's an opportunity if you have reach out, but the United States would have to do it, but they don't have the capacity or credibility to do so right now. And the fear of the Hamas is they're just going to replace Sinwar with somebody else who's another hardliner, like his son, who's also a hardliner. And people need to understand, and this is where the United States has to play a hard role, meaning make the hard calls. You tell Hamas, you tell the Palestinians, until you bring somebody in here who's reasonable to do this, there's no such thing as a two-state solution, none, zero, right at all. And people need to understand the possibility that happening in the near term is not there. In other words, a Palestinian state. Because it's going to take a long time to bring the Palestinians back on board. I remind everybody that it took the United States of America, the southern states of the United States, after the Civil War, 11 years to reintegrate the Union with the North, with the Union. It took Germany and Japan probably 11 to 12 years to reunite with the normal world after World War II. This thing is not going to go away overnight. The Israelis are just not going to turn it off right away. They're not, because they're so grieved by this, as rightfully they should be. So it's going to take the United States to play, and I don't think they are. So the bad news, the good news is there an opportunity? Yes. Is it going to happen? The answer is no, because the people that will have to be the broker in this is the United States. And they'd have to be a broker with the Saudis and the Qataris and people like that. And this administration doesn't have the legs. First of all, doesn't have the time to do it because they're running out of airspeed and altitude with the election coming up. And Harris has got no relationships at all in the Middle East at all. None. Zero. So is there an opportunity? Yes. Is it going to happen? No.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep the fighting going? In all probability, yes, until they come up with a reasonable solution that Hamas is not going to be running the government in Gaza, and the Palestinians are going to have to pick up a different leader. I don't think they will in the short term. So that's, there's good news and bad news, and you got both.
Yeah, it sounds like chaos continues to reign supreme on the opposition to Israel. You're talking about Kamala Harris's ability to negotiate in that region, meaningfully negotiate. I'm trying to think of a time where she's been asked a question or had the opportunity to speak on this issue where it hasn't just, kind of been like, we want peace, we'd like a ceasefire, a hopeful two-state solution, some positive things about American support for Israel, but nothing that really has teeth. And I'm wondering, should Donald Trump win this election? He's boastfully talked about both the Ukraine conflict with Russia and the Middle East conflict, that he would be able to have great impact on both of those conflicts before he is even inaugurated. Does that have to do with the gravitas that he brings just from what he's already done in a first term? How does he feel so confident that he can have that much influence on these conflicts an ocean away?
Well, the reason he can do that is because, one, he's got a track record. But the second is, when you are in transition, and let's say it could happen the 6th or 7th of November, whenever they call the election, then you start making pronouncements and you start doing things. And everybody shifts their thinking. They move from the previous administration to a new administration in transition. And he's got the ability to do that. And the reason he's got that ability to do it is there's one thing that Donald Trump has that Harris doesn't have and Biden hasn't. One sliver right there. Remember, Biden hasn't talked to Putin in over 2 years. So Trump has always had the ability to connect with leaders. He picks up the phone and calls anybody. I mean, he will talk to anybody. I mean, look at what happened this weekend at McDonald's. He'll go talk to people. He feels good about it. He does that with leaders. That's a very key quality of leadership, is the ability to reach out to friends and adversaries as well. And he will do that immediately. He'll start talking to people, and leaders will start calling him immediately. That's how it works when you have a change of government. And he'll start saying things immediately. This is what he wants to do. And that will keep people say, okay, this is where he wants to go. And they're not going to start changing their attitudes on the 20th of January. They will start changing their attitudes on the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th of November, because they're going to say, okay, this guy's coming in. So if you've got that ability, that quality to be able to talk to foreign leaders, which Trump has shown in 4 years of governance, plus the way he is just as a person, and that Biden does not have, and Harris hasn't shown she's got an ability to do it, that's where you start to see the changes. And I've been asked that question before. I said, no, change can start occurring almost immediately. Because people say, I don't want to get on the wrong side.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do. And they will reach out to him. So it's not even very subtle at all. It's actually how the world actually works. Mm-hmm. So can he do it? The answer is yeah. And he will start making pronouncements. People are going to say, well, I'm going to be dealing with this guy for 4 years. How do we do it? And that's the reason why I think he's got an enormous advantage. If he didn't have that personality, that he couldn't do that or wouldn't do that or have the capacity to do it, it's a different story. But we all know who he is. We all know how he operates. We all saw him, how he operated with foreign leaders. And it's just his DNA.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible advantage.
And they know, too. The people who are right in these foreign countries, they certainly do as well. Touching on that CNN article I was reading about this leak of highly classified U.S. intelligence about Israel's plan for retaliation against Iran. To me, I'm looking for the teeth in this story. And I'm wondering if this is just, getting ahead of some sort of news report that might be coming out. But when you hear about these quote unquote leaked documents that suggest that there are Israeli plans for an attack, a retaliation attack against Iran, what are your thoughts as Lieutenant General? How do you feel about what this leak might entail?
Well, to start with, they ought to have an investigation to find out if there was in fact a leak, and that didn't happen. Now, here's one thing I would be surprised about. I would be shocked, however, if the Israelis told us anything about any attack plans, because they don't trust us. They don't trust this administration. And they might say, yeah, we're going to attack in the north when really they're going to attack in the south type deal. But I don't know if they would have given us it. But if they did, and that's always concerning, and those were in fact leaked, and you can probably run the trap lines of where that information was, because when it comes to sensitive information like that, that is only given to certain organizations within the government and certain people within the government, and they can probably track that down. But, man, I will tell you, I put everybody that is involved in that on a polygraph in a heartbeat and say, we're going to try to find out what actually happened, because you've got to send a message internally.
Does that happen? You put people on a polygraph to figure out who – is that something that legit happens, to figure out who the leaker would be?
Sure, it could happen, because when you've got the high-level clearances, they call it departments – when you've got an SCI ability, you are subject to polygraph at any time.
Wow.
Because that's basically the most senior and most significant documents that are there. And that's the reason when they call it TS, as in top secret, TSSCI, top secret special compartmented information. When you go to the SCI level, that's well above TS. That's really compartment. And you say to people, no, if you've got an ability to touch the SCI data, then you are subject to a polygraph. See, that's the reason I say I'd check that out. But there's two parts to the story. One is check it out and find out if it's true. But the second is, it's like the Israelis really don't trust us really well. And I don't blame them at all. I wouldn't tell us anything at all. And if I did tell us, I'd tell us just the opposite of what I was going to do. So it's one of those I'd find out being invented. And because, we have shown quite well that we are not in their camp, full score. You know, and what I mean by that is we've had great opportunity to say we are with the Israelis full up, and we haven't done it. Now, we haven't given them equipment yet, but it's been slow in coming. But we've made comments to them that we're kind of saying, well, we kind of want to be, equal-footed on this, support them. We support Hamas and the Palestinians, support the Israelis. No. You say full up, we support the Israelis. You know, that's what You know, Richard Nixon in 1973 after the Yom Kippur War, when at the third day of the fighting going on there, the Israelis were really concerned they were going to lose this fight. And so what President Nixon did, President Nixon basically called in his military and said, everything that has an airplane that can fly to Israel, you load up with equipment and send it to them. And they did that. And the Russians came out and said, well, we may have to get involved in this. And boy, Nixon went right back and said, we are now raising our defense condition, which is a real signal. When you raise your debt, what's called a DEFCON, defense condition. Mm-hmm. When you raise the DEFCON, it sends a real signal, we're getting ready for a fight. And he raised the DEFCON and told the Russians, okay, fine, this is what we're going to do. And the Russians said, on second thought, we're not going to do anything. And that's how you kind of have to handle it.
Yeah.
But this administration hasn't done it.
So much gamesmanship. Kind of been,
oh, absolutely. But that's what part of politics is.
Yeah. I wanted to, before we let you go, respectful of your time, Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg with you. I couldn't pass up the opportunity to share one of your most recent posts on X with a picture of Donald Trump hanging out of a drive-through window at a McDonald's. It's an amazing photograph. And you posted, it is said a picture is worth 1,000 words. Donald Trump serving fries and welcoming people at a McDonald's drive-thru from Fight, Fight, Fight after getting shot at a rally to this. This is the real Donald Trump I know. You know this man personally. You have worked mm-hmm. with him. You've been with him. Do you think that America is starting to understand who Donald Trump really is as a human being more than they have in the years leading up to this election?
You know, Annie, I really hope so, because, you know, I've been with President Trump since 2015. And I can't even really love the guy, because the guy, you know, is so, he's so great. He loves America so much, and you don't see it. Well, I got to give you one anecdote, because it's kind of funny. During the middle of COVID, I remember I walked in the Oval Office with him, and we were sitting around and kind of talking, and he looked at me, and we just kind of, you know, kind of casually sitting there, and he goes, he said, just like this, I just want Americans to get better. And I said, sir, stop it right there. You go out right now, go down to the press room, and you say just that. He goes, no, that shows weakness. Oh, God. So it's, you know, his public persona is so different than his private persona. And people will tell you that. You know, he's good hearted. He's got an incredible sense of humor. He's incredibly gracious with his time and what he is and who he is and what he has done. And there's so much written about him that the way he is. I'm just telling you, my daughter once said, Dad, you ought to write a book one of these days and write the book Behind Closed Doors, because I saw what he's like as a human being. You know, here's the, and I'll say this to you and to your audience, because it's one of those things you think about. You know, you look at Donald J. Trump as a family man, and he's been married 3 times. Ivana's passed away. But all three of his wives adore him. And then he's got 5 children, one from each one of the marriages, including most recently Barron with Melania. The kids all adore him, and he treats them incredibly well. And look at what they look like. Look how they, you know, posture themselves. That's part of parenting.
Yes.
And you and parents out there know it. And said, you tell me what families are like that. Even the Reagan family wasn't like that. You know, Michael Reagan wasn't a big fan at all, mm-hmm. even his dad. So I say, you kind of look a little bit and back up a little bit and look at the man and say, am I missing something here? Because I think they are. And I'm just hoping when you see from, and that, what I saw him looking out the window with that big grin, I said, that's the Donald Trump I know. And then when he got shot and he stood up and yelled, fight, and, you know, said, fight, 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 that's the Donald Trump I know. And that's the reason why I tell people I'm with him. I've been with him. I've seen him. I've seen the personal levels that I've been in. And I've seen what he believes with his military, men and women in military. And I just tell people, I said, that's what I see. That's what I know. And it's, you know, and I understand it's a personal level, but I just really believe in him. And I think he'd be great for America. I really do. Again.
Well, that's real. And that's the stories, the anecdotes that people want to hear. Larry is listening to us, watching us on YouTube, and he said he'd read that book. So if you read it, Larry's going to be first. Or if you write it, Larry's going to be first in line to get it and hear those stories from behind closed doors. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, it's always such an honor and pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for the time again today. We're really grateful for it.
Thanks, Annie. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We'll do it again soon. Thank you so much. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, the former National Security Advisor to Donald Trump. He's also the co-chair of the Center for American Security at America First Policy Institute. Check him out on X at General Kellogg. That's where you can see that post. I mean, the picture of Donald Trump. Whoever snapped that picture, just chef's kiss. Same as the photo, the fight, fight, fight photo with the right after the shot, after President Trump was shot and he's got his fist in the air and the American flag is blowing in the background. He's got blood on his face. I mean, those are moments that happen. There are moments like that that happen all the time. When you're able to capture it in a photograph, boy, you can change the course of history with an image like that. And I think the McDonald's one out the drive-thru, it's one of those photos. Quick break. When we come back, let's revisit the YouTube live chat poll. Do you approve of Trump's McDonald's stop? Yes or no? You got to tell us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Go vote in the live chat poll. Back in a minute.
Get more at 971talk.com.